This is Yusuf.
This is
In-Flight Entertainment. The freaking frightening film month.
Yes,
and we are deep into our Throwback Thursday episode of our Triple F freaking frightening films. And today we got a special guest.
Right. Well, so we're continuing the animal theme this week with today's movie. So
yes. And to help us talk about this particular film, this man, in my eyes, need no introduction, but we got to give him an introduction. I met this fine gentleman and fellow filmmaker at the Austin Revolution Film Festival. Shout out to James and all the R fam. Yeah, we hit it off immensely. We stayed in touch. Whenever he's in LA, you know, we'd grab a beer, and I will hope to return the favor once all this craziness is over to visit him one of these days. Just all around great guy, and I can't say enough great things about him. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, people in the back, front, side, put your hands together for Jason Buterin. Dang it. Man, I messed that whole...
Your heart was in it.
I messed that whole intro up, man. Good Lord.
That's all right. We're starting over. All right, cut. We're doing one for safety, right?
No, we freestyle it. So, how you doing, brother? Tell everyone out there in podcast land a little bit about yourself.
Podcast land. Well, my turn-ons are alliteration and people who use coasters. I mean, that's really about it. I mean, I think, oddly enough, that just sums up my entire existence at that point. As the overly kind and sincere Mr. Yusuf said, we met at Austin Revolution Film Faker Festival. I've been a filmmaker now, film fakers. I'm fucking alliteration abusing mode. I just want to do that right now. Austin Revolution Film Festival, one of my favorite places in the world, full of beautiful people who haven't told me to fuck off, and they still remain my friends, which makes my heart happy. I don't know what the language rating is for this, but I curse a lot.
So. Oh, no, this is not. This is totally for not for kids. It's totally for kids. No, I'm just playing.
Cool. But no, I've been making movie magic. And I met you in Austin. I met some other fine friends in Austin. And have just kind of dove headfirst in the world of movie magic and independent cinema. Had no idea it was coming. Never took a class in it. Got into it entirely because of a golden goddess, who is much smarter than I am. I suspect that she knew the entire time, but just got involved and it just started off as a very independent sort of bohemian on the weekend, once a year kind of a thing. And then it just completely, like a cinematic succubus, took over my entire life. And I did a lot of short films, and now I've done a feature film, and now I'm experiencing everything that comes after making a feature film, and distribution, and legal deliverables, and lawyers, and forms, and more forms, and more forms. I always knew I was going to die by quicksand. I just didn't know by quicksand they meant PDFs. So it didn't quite come across in the Dukes of Hazzard episode. But, you know, I mean, I'm sure Roscoe P. Coltrane didn't even have PDF back then. So,
no.
But yeah, I do the movie thing. I also play in the band, not Sexual Chocolate. I wish I played in Sexual Chocolate.
Okay, this interview is over. That's fine.
I know, dude. I should have. I kind of fudged my IMDb page a little bit. So you would like me. But I play drums. I make the drums go boom, boom. I'm father to a beautiful boy. And then the whole coaster thing and alliteration. I mean, that's about what I do.
Right on. And definitely congratulations on your feature, Kill Giggles.
I should have said the name of the movie. I'm so bad.
Yeah, well, look, I will plug it for you. It's fine. Don't worry about it. You know, I pick it up wherever you put down, I'll pick it back up. So, congratulations. Can't wait to, check it out. Seen some trailers. Looks amazing. Give us a little teaser, man. Like, what's this madness about?
For most of my life, have been deathly afraid of clowns. And it's called coulrophobia. It was actually in the DSM-4. They took it out of 5 for some reason. I don't know, probably politics. DSM-4, coulrophobia. I wasn't born this way. I think it was a proactive life choice I made. I saw the movie Poltergeist.
I feel like after Poltergeist, a certain age developed a fear of clowns.
That was it. I think I was 5 or 6, and I dressed up as a clown for Halloween. Like, I was cool with it. I was inundated. I drank the Kool-Aid. I'm like, clowns are okay. And then I saw Poltergeist, and that movie completely fucking unhinged my psyche. I'm like, no. And then, just deathly afraid. I hate clowns. I still don't like looking at them. I get uncomfortable looking at them. So what do? I make a feature-length film about them, because as we've clearly already established, 14 minutes into this, I am not smart. So Kill Giggles, I grew up afraid of clowns. And as you have known for a while now, they've kind of been the popular zeitgeist, and it comes back, and there's killer clowns from outer space, there's Pennywise from all the different incarnations of it, yada, 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 yada.
Right.
And especially within the last few years, I kept seeing, there are all these films coming out, but I never saw one where the clowns were the victims. It was always the clowns were the monsters, the murderers, the spreaders of mayhem, the serial killers. They always dressed up like clowns. I was like, why hasn't anyone made a serial killer of clowns? Mm-hmm. And it seemed like a very simple question to me at the time. So I tried to do a bunch of research. I couldn't find anything like it. It seemed like such a simple kind of a twist to it. And then being deathly afraid of clowns myself, it made it easier to pour a lot of myself into it. So what we have with Kill Giggles is we have a serial killer of clowns, not one who just puts on the floppy feet and the rainbow wig. And it's a love story. It's a thriller more than a horror. We have some amazing death scenes in the film.
Nice.
But to me, Hitchcock has been a tremendous influence on me. Psycho, I watched it entirely way too young for the very first time, and the last scene of that movie has never left my head at any given time. It's always playing somewhere in the background. and so that was one of the first scenes I'd written for Kill Giggles, was an homage to the last scene of Psycho. And then I was just like, I wrote the last scene first, and then the first scene second, and then I just filled all the rest in. And I got carried away. The first draft of the script was 300 pages, and I stopped writing. I wasn't done yet, because every time I told my cameraman how long it was, he peed a little. I flashed and got it down. It's a thriller horror, and it's sort of we have this character Tommy DeSantos, who was portrayed by the award winning Mr. Michael Ray Williams, who's just a beautiful boy, nice. My brother from another mother. And Tommy DeSantos, he kills clowns, but he's not in his mind, he's not killing a person. He's demonized and dehumanized to the point where he sees man-shaped monsters. And that's what all the best stories throughout history are about, is killing monsters. So in his mind, like, he's not doing anything wrong. So then he ends up falling in love with someone who has a history and association. And it's a thriller horror love story with some brilliant clown death and just all sorts of, a lot of my homages. I was able to make this movie we shot into everything around North Carolina, but the film friends and family that I had spent the last few years on the indie film circuit gathering and making, and the relationships I made and stuff like that, I was able to bring a lot of those people in. Not everyone, otherwise I would have had Brother Yusuf playing the detective, because that just would have been awesome.
Part two.
Or in the band Sexual Chocolate, we would have had like a Sexual Chocolate tribute band, and then like I would have had
Or I could have been a reverend at a funeral. It's fine. Whatever.
Yeah, we're getting part two. We're saving it more for the trilogy.
All right, good. Okay. I'm gonna stand back.
Thinking franchise and long term here. So he kills all these monsters, and then he ends up falling in love, and then like his the heart starts to take over where the mind was ruling for a while, and then it just sort of things spiral out of control wonderfully and chaotically and horribly, and then it ends, or does it? It was my first feature, and it was a dream come true and my worst nightmare all at the same time, which I guess is what art is supposed to be.
Amen. Well, I'm proud of you, man. I can't wait to check it out.
Everything sort of fell together. We had some amazing people, like, I mean, just Mr. Michael Williams, and then Ellie Church, who's just amazing. I mean, she's done so much stuff in indie film, and everything she does is just fucking awesome. And the local people here that I'd wanted to work with for a long time, Mr. Patrick G. Keene and Nareda Velasquez. We had an amazing amount of people on both sides of the camera that just, for a first feature, I mean, it was I lost my camera. And I'm back. All right, there we go.
Oh, cool. There we go.
Hit the wrong damn button. I know. I got a perfect face for radio, so I don't want the people to lose sight of that. But, I mean, we had so many people. And then, I mean, it just sort of spiraled out of control because Delisa Rose, from Sleepaway Camp, Family Possessions, Island Nuts Curse.
Nice.
I still remember the very first time I watched Sleepaway Camp. I mean, I checked it out from the Video Classics in Warrenton, Missouri, because that was my two best friends growing up were the video store in the county library. But like bringing home Sleepaway Camp and being like, yeah, I mean, that movie, it's got a set of the best lines I wish I'd written. Eat shit and die, Ricky. Eat shit and live, Bill. It's like, why couldn't I have written that? Eat shit and live. But the ending of that film, and I mean, I don't want to go into spoilers.
Yeah, no spoilers, though. If people haven't seen that movie, because that was.
Which, I mean, still to this day, has one of the most jaw-dropping endings for a slasher horror film ever. I grew up watching that movie, so to have Felicity involved with it, and then Judith O'Day from Night of the Living Dead, I mean, just an amazing individual. And then Vernon fucking Wells, you know? All these people just got involved for my first feature, and I'm like, everyone's looking at me to tell them what to do. I'm like, I have no idea what the fuck I'm doing. Like, I should have read one of those books on directing back there. I'm like,
fake it till you make it.
Yeah. Lucky for me, I had a brilliant badass AD, so he saved me from everything and made it look like I knew what I was doing because I.
That was awesome. When I started seeing the cast and like the constant announcements of the casting, you know, throughout your Facebook updates while you were filming, I'm like, holy shimoni. that's pretty dope.
Yeah, we had a really good time doing it. We're wrapping up a distribution deal now, so I can't wait until all the T's are dotted and the I's are crossed. I'm not at liberty to say, but it'll be big for North America, and then the rest of the world will follow suit. So, I mean, everything about this film is just, we've been insanely lucky we don't have the horror stories that you always hear about, or at least we haven't yet. Or if we have, I didn't bother to read that 79 page PDF I signed. I'm sure it'll work out well. Right.
Well, that's cool, man. Well, like I said, I'm definitely excited to see, the trajectory of, Kill Giggles, and it's only, to the moon from here, but
it's gonna be a hoot. Well, if the apocalypse would fuck off, then I could come out to LA and do a screening.
Yes,
I hang out with you though.
So. Yes, yes.
I don't like LA really.
Well, I'm here, so whatever. You make a deception.
I mean, you make everything better. I mean, I mean, that smile. How could I possibly go wrong?
Well, I appreciate you, brother. So now we're going from clowns to wolves. Mm-hmm. And what are we reviewing today, gentlemen?
We are doing the 1994 horror, I say that in quotes, Wolf.
Yes. Starring...
Yes. Starring Jack Nicholson, mm-hmm. Michelle Pfeiffer, and James Spader.
James Spader, man.
I mean, from the 80s, 90s, and to today, he plays the ultimate white douchebag. And just, I love that he embraced the typecasting of who he was and could play in every movie was the white douchebag.
Yeah. So, because the 80s, it was him. And it was like Bill Zabka, like, Johnny from Karate Kid, like he would, have those roles, where he's like the bully douchebag kind of jock guy.
I feel like he continued to get all of the roles past the 80s where the other douchebags kind of faded away.
Yeah. Well, Zabka, he's back with Cobra Kai. So,
Right. Yes.
I fucking love that show.
Yeah, I'm on the second season right now. So
it is the best worst thing I've ever watched. It's like fucking Karate Kid 90210. Like from a writing point of view, like you know, like you watch the first episode, you know how the entire season is gonna roll out. But goddamn, if I wasn't to like every 27 minutes.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and that's the beauty of the show because they know they knew the length. Like we can't make hour long episodes of this. We got to make this 27 over to 27 over to 27. Season's done. Yeah, because it's not.
But the thing is, I don't feel like because season one came out a year ago or a year and a half ago. Yeah. I don't feel that show would be as successful as it is now or people talking about it as much now if we weren't in the middle of COVID. So I feel like us being in quarantine has actually helped that show.
I mean, it's helped a ton of shows, movies. I mean, look at all the, I mean, film festivals. I mean, everything is going virtual and online and stuff like that because you can't, we can't do anything. So that's why, I mean, a lot of people have asked me, it was like, what is it like trying to release a movie in the apocalypse? It fucking sucks. It's like, yeah, we've had all these amazing screens, but we've got other stuff lined up for that digital platform. But yeah, I mean, I think the apocalypse, I mean, there's no way to try and justify and make anything comparable. But I mean, if there has to be some kind of a slightly less Stygian silver lining, at least, I mean, it's opened people's eyes to other means of distraction. I mean, right. it's given other things new life. Force people to come a little bit more creative, I would hope. Yeah. They're not using their fucking turn signal, so I don't get that. You can't not use turn signals and not wear a mask. You fuckers, you have to pick one or the other. You can only break one rule. You can't break both anymore. So.
Can I add to that, put your shopping cart away also?
Yes, sure.
Oh, yeah.
New World Order. It's fine. I like
it. Yeah, I mean, that's like a dawn of time commandment type thing right there. Like, shopping cart, put that shit back. okay. So this film was released. Well, I mean, it's the happy tangents, whatever. So this film was released June 17th, 1994. Do you guys want to know what we were watching June 17th, 1994? On the blue tube.
Was that a Tuesday? Because I think I had a gig that day.
So I'm pretty sure the big thing on the news in June 1994 was the O.J. Simpson stuff.
Was that 94, huh? When was the Challenger?
Challenger was like in the 80s.
86.
Okay. Yeah, that's way back. Yeah, O.J. Yeah.
O.J. was summer of 94 because I was working at the Radisson, and it was between my freshman and sophomore year, and I was completely shit-faced that entire summer. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if it was on TV, but I do remember O.J. Simpson.
All right. It's like, what's up with this white truck? Why are they following it? All right. But on television, okay, this is 94. So I'm going from 5 to 1. So 5 was Monday Night Football. Number 4, Grace Under Fire. Anyone remember that show?
Yep.
Grace Under Fire. Yeah.
Yeah.
It was a blonde woman, right? Or I kind of remember that show. Anyway, so Tim Allen was holding it down with Home Improvement. Number 3, Clooney and the Crew, ER. Number 2. And of course, number 1, y'all know what number 1 is. 94.
Was it the Cosby's?
No, this is not. No, 90 is 94. This is Envy. This is
Melrose Place. Oh, The Heights.
Seinfeld.
Hey, by the bell.
Seinfeld. This was the era of Seinfeld, 94. This was Seinfeld just came through like a tsunami to a television. That was like Seinfeld and Friends and yeah, all them other people. Okay, and the song of 94. Wow, I can't believe this one. Who remember this beautiful ballad, I Swear, from All For One?
Could you
I swear, from the moon and the stars in the sky, I'll be there. I mean, it was like a wedding song. And I swear, Da-da-da. I put on underwear. That's not the lyrics, but I don't know. But yeah, so. So. Huh?
Who sang that?
All for One. That was the name. It was like their one. It was like their only hit.
So. They weren't playing that at the nightclubs that I was going
to. It's a slow. It was like a wedding song. You know, it was like a slow kind of walk down the aisle type ballad.
I was 19. I wasn't going to weddings.
Yeah, so there you go. Yeah, so that was what we were rocking on our CD players, 94. Yeah. Portable CD players around 94. All for One.
Discman in 94? Wow.
Yeah, I had my portable Discman in 94. Yep, because I worked at my first job. I was an usher at a movie theater downtown Chicago. And the first thing I did with my paycheck, I got a portable Discman because I used to, you know, commute via train or bus. So I had to have, you know, my music. So
you got to listen to All for One on something. Yeah.
I mean, you can't just... Yeah, not exactly. It wasn't
really. I didn't have a portable CD player. I still had my Walkman. So
I had to upgrade. I wanted to upgrade. I had
a CD player for the dorm room, but I had a Walkman for like walking around and campus and studying.
Yeah, well, I wanted to be Big Shot, so like I bought my portable disc with my first check. Damn it, because I wanted the style, and I had to. Because I bought my old 94. I bought my old Dirty Bastard CD. Yeah, you know, had that in there. And, you know, that just changed it all. All right. So by getting the brass tacks with this particular film. So
for those that aren't aware, Wolf is basically the story. It's a werewolf story.
Yeah. A modern day take on it, if you will.
Oddly enough, they never say werewolf in the film.
Right.
No, they say what, demon dog or demon wolf or something.
Yeah, but you never hear like they ever say like werewolf, their castle. Like, they leave all that behind.
Yeah, which is interesting. Now this film's directed by Mike Nichols. Okay, so for people who don't know Mike Nichols,
Where have they been? They should know Mike Nichols.
But you know, there are, you know, people that just watch movies but don't really know who delivers these films. So I'm just going to start with like the first movie, which is Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf, 1966. Then he followed up Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf with The Graduate. And he worked with Jack Nicholson. I think this is his first collaboration with Jack Nicholson in Carnal Knowledge. I need to rewatch that. I remember I watched that in film class. It was pretty interesting. And then we move forward to he worked with Meryl Streep with Silkwood, 1983. Heartburn, 1986. I think that was Kathleen Turner. Biloxi Blues, 1988. Working Girl, 1988. Also, he did a Bang Bang back to back with those two films. Regarding Henry, Postcards from the Edge. This film we are reviewing, Wolf. Then after Wolf, 1996, he dropped The Birdcage, and Primary Colors after that in 1998. So he's been doing, he was doing some things prior to Wolf, to say the least. Great filmography. I mean, if I had 10% of the films he have done, I would be a lucky man.
He passed away in 2014, November 19th, which was my 30th birthday. So,
We need to watch some Mike. We need to make a tradition to watch Mike Nichols movies on your birthday.
That was my 40th birthday, not my 30th. I don't know how old I am. Sorry.
I still think it's March, so I mean it's cool.
Yeah, yeah. Time, yeah. Time don't exist. What is that? That's a foreign concept. Years. Well, I don't know what that is. What is that? Yeah. So you should make it a tradition, like watch a Mike Nichols film on your birthday.
Yeah, Yeah, and he has plenty of good ones to choose from, so we can work on that.
Yes. So this film is very unique. And Genoa made an awesome a statement of she put air quotes in a horror, like air quotes.
It's not a horror film.
Yeah. I mean, it's maybe one or two, maybe four at the most, like werewolf moments. Like really werewolf moments. But you know, the rest is more of, you know, the Jack Nixon.
Romance movie.
Exactly. Right. That's cloaked in the genre of the werewolf.
Yeah. Well, I think you've got the romantic elements. You've got, I mean, there's a whole series of sardonic one-liners that sort of balance the depression of the drama of the love story and everything else like that. But I mean, to me, it's almost more of a gothic horror, which I mean, you know, it's got a lot of gothic horror elements, which are not traditional horror, especially what we think of like in cinematic horror. I mean, it's very subdued and undertone, and it's a slow burn and everything else like that. But I mean, I think it's a brilliant adaptation of the werewolf, the Canterbury mythology.
Right.
And relegating that to like the culture of toxic masculinity. And I mean, that's the beautiful thing about it, I guess. You know, it's a metaphor for the male fantasy. So I mean, like, and who better to embody that
than Jack?
I mean, Rick Baker is handling the effects. Like Rick
Baker, yeah.
He had a score by Ennio Morricone, which most people don't forget about. Cause like all he did was like play a bunch of strings.
Which is amazing.
Like, I can't help but think that, like somewhere in the casting or somewhere, you know, in a trailer somewhere, like Mike Nichols and Rick Baker are looking at Nicholson. And there's like, just fluff up his sideburns and give him contact. Like that's all you had to do for Nicholson.
Yeah, and just have Nick, go into his like scowl and shining mode. You know, far as his face. Yeah, and you got a werewolf.
I mean, it's got great gothic horror elements, but I know a lot of people, and I think that was part of the problem with the reception of it. I mean, still even now, it's like you're just like you think Nicholson in a werewolf movie. This is going to be great. Like. But it's not what you think it's gonna be.
Exactly.
And then like it's Spader Wolf's out, and you're like, what the? And then there's that one guy from Friends who's a cop, and you're like, seriously? And then you got Christopher Plummer, and then like Richard Jenkins, like just a lineup cast of that film. The ensemble is amazing.
It's amazing, yeah. I mean, because I'm sure if Mike Nichols calls you, I'm assuming, you know, whether you be Christopher Plummer or like, hey, I'm doing this werewolf movie. I want you to join. I mean,
originally it was supposed to be Brando.
Yeah. Brando.
Like Christopher Plummer's role. Yeah.
Yeah. But I mean, no, Jack definitely pulled it off. And what I really like about Jack's performance in this particular and Wolf, he like you would expect Jack to kind of skew more into his kind of manic, you know, the weird craziness during the day, like non-wolf. I mean, but he maintained his quiet, subdued, kind of hunched over, kind of beaten by life, you know, persona for most of the movie. Even when he's bitten, like his confidence and like kind of his more kind of wolf instincts is more in the business aspect of himself more so than like the physical. It's like, okay, this is what I'm about to do. Like, we're going to do this business strategy with this publishing thing. I'm going to, you know, flip the script on these people kind of thing. You know, it wasn't more of like,
I don't feel like this movie is really, I mean, yes, the fact that he's bitten by a wolf, because a werewolf is sort of the thing that moves the movie along. Yeah. But this is really about the underdog being put in a situation where he's finally given the power to take charge of his life and not be like pushed aside for some younger, hotter bullshit douchebag.
Right. Now, this is an early midnight. Was this still kind of like the revolt against yuppies around this time, or was that just 80s? Because I think James Spader would kind of represent kind of like the new, younger kind of...
He represented like the Wall Street yuppie.
Yeah, okay.
Yuppies. Yeah.
Okay, right.
Well, I mean, I think a lot of it, too, is, I mean, just that sort of typical, especially, I mean, in, you know, the cusp between the 80s and 90s, that I mean, white male life cycle to where it's like, by the time you reach middle age, it's like you start to feel less important and less masculine and less, I mean, just less, I mean, less everything. So it's like, you know, I mean, Spader comes along, gets Nicholson's job, gets Nicholson's wife. I mean, like gets all of these things. And then like, once Nicholson starts to wolf out, he literally pisses on James Spader's shoes.
Oh, urinal. So good.
I'm marking my territory.
You got in the way.
Like, I would love to be able to pull it off. Just like, oh, but I mean, I if I ever run into James Spader, I'm going to have to piss on his shoes now, and I'll deal with that later. Maybe it's like being replaced by the younger model and stuff like that. And a lot of that has been, you know, you would typically see that, and forgive me if I'm speaking out of turn, but I think from the female point of view, it's a, you know, the older wife being replaced by the younger model, or, you know, by, you know, someone prettier and younger and everything else like that. So to be able to flip it to where it's like, you've got the males who are the ones in danger of being replaced and are finding out just how fragile that whole entire ecosystem can be until you take the alpha role and start, you know, the wolf comes out. And I love how he's talking with, he's got the interview with the doctor, and he's talking about, like, you know, you don't even have to be bit. You know, if someone is passionate enough about it, like the dominant parts of the dominant traits of their personality will, or the dormant parts will become dominant, and they can wolf out on it. They don't have, you don't have to get bitten. I thought that was a beautiful thing, because it's not the typical, you know, that's how it passes on.
Right.
And especially, I don't know if we're going to go into the ending of the film or not, but I mean, it's like, I mean, if we're doing it from a non-spoiler point of view, the way that the film ends, what happens with the character and stuff like that, like, was never actually bitten, but what their actions do completely exemplifies what the doctor says. Like, it was just a whole, right. I love that extension of the mythology of it.
Yeah, no, it was really clever. I mean, so clever. It took me about 3 viewings to really get that point of view that you just told. It just one of those, like, it just hits you like, oh, okay. Yes. Now I get it.
But the weird thing, the doctor who said that, because then, like, the doctor asked Nicholson to bite him. Mm-hmm. Like, if he just believed that much and was that, is that passionate about it, it seems like he could, or else maybe they had to make out, or maybe they had to shag. I don't know. Like, that was, I mean, honestly, like, I mean, I would probably shag Nicholson just to say I did it at this point.
I tried to pass my wolfness on.
Yeah. Cause, I mean, it's just like, I mean, how many times is that going to come up? So, like, well, I mean, okay. You know, I'd take a shot in the mouth or whatever. I don't know. But I mean, it's just, yeah, it's a different time than it was in 94.
Yeah, well put. Yeah.
Well, I mean, to everything that you guys are saying, that I don't feel that this movie is a young person's movie. I feel like you have to be older and have gone through some life and been pushed aside by the younger person to really get what is happening in this movie. Otherwise, you're just sort of like, what the fuck am I watching?
Yeah,
well, it's like a middle-aged superhero movie.
Yeah.
Like a middle-aged man from SNL, from Mike Myers. And it's like middle-aged man, because he knew how escrow worked. And I gave him a superpower.
Right. I think it was the 80s movie where the guy in Los Angeles just gets pissed off in traffic and starts going around shooting people.
That's 93, Falling Down. Michael Douglas.
Yeah. Right. So this is the wolf version of that in my mind.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And it's funny how, like, those films back then, they were not afraid to make the lead like the middle age, or, you know, over middle age, or at that point in their life, the character's life, where kind of the best years are behind them and they're trying to adapt and cope with this new reality of being a certain age. I'm like, you know, just telling those kind of like stories more so now, like, you gotta have, you know, you gotta be from a younger perspective, or, you know, people ain't gonna watch it, or the younger people ain't gonna watch it. So, I mean, it's definitely a film that you're not going to see. I'm not going to say ever, but it's going to be hard to have studios invest in films that focus on, you know, main characters that, like I said, of a certain age, that's not the young up and coming hot shots that have to learn the lesson to, you know, achieve the goal or what have you.
It doesn't fit in a little box inside the Netflix Redbox bin. Like, I mean, what, like, it's kind of horror-y, kind of drama, kind of, yeah. I mean, it's like watching, like, if Buffy and fucking, like, all the soap operas in the world, like Guiding Light, whatever my fucking grandma, like, those two, like, had a little bastard love child, it would be Wolf.
Yeah.
Not to mention, you get to see like the Joker making out with Catwoman. Something like that. I mean, that was it. Like, it's like Batman erotic fanfic, you know?
I mean, it's just pretty much. Yeah. Except, you know, like the cat, but the cat thing is in reverse.
And Michelle Pfeiffer, I mean, she's just.
Yeah.
God bless her. it was interesting. So I said I was reading up on stuff on about it, like, and they apparently, like, people have hinted about they should do a sequel and blah 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 and kind of like and flip it, but it's lightning's only going to strike that one time. You can't recapture that magic.
But. Exactly. Yeah. Plus Mike Nichols is past, so you can't do it.
If they did a sequel, it would only be Michelle Pfeiffer. You don't bring back the like Jack.
No,
just
no.
Michelle. And you do her story arc as the female lead, Alpha Wolf.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that could work. I mean, possibly. But I'm all for the proverbial sleeping dogs lie. Yeah, exactly. And actually, what I didn't know was, I guess Jack wanted to do this movie for a while. Like a long while.
Yeah. It was a few years, I think, wasn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. To the point where I think it was conceived when he was younger looking Jack. kind of Shaq, almost like shining Jack looking Jack a little bit. Now he's like kind of older, Few Good Men looking Jack, you know, and Wolf. But he still wanted to do it. I mean, which kind of give more dynamic to the character. Like, he's a little older, you know, which, you know, just totally changed the story up a little bit. And, you know, and give it more of that young versus old type, you know, thing. And all right, and okay, it's time to wax James Spader's car a little bit. Oh, speaking of Joker, Catwoman, Joker was fighting Ultron in this movie. Because you know James Spader was the voice of Ultron in, like, Mitch. So, yeah. I mean, we can go cop with him. We want to go geeky like that. I mean, I'll match that.
You're mixing, like, DC and Marvel, and, you know, that's just too confusing for some people.
Yeah, but still awesome. James Spader. We talk about James Spader. Yes, so good. I mean, the last 20 minutes of the movie was like the James Spader show. I'd like to call it that. Once you see those eyes, you know, well, he got into that James Spader swag, sinister swag. in a sly way talks/interrogates the Michelle Pfeiffer character. You know, as he sniffs her creepily.
I mean, is there a non-creepy way to sniff somebody, though? You know?
Good point.
No. As a woman, no, never.
I don't know. It's like, it's not a cool way to walk downstairs. Like, there are just certain things that just want to be better. Yeah, no matter who you are.
Yeah, agree.
But no, Spader was brilliant. I mean, it's just one of those instantly sleazebag characters. As soon as you see them on screen, like, you know, you're not going to like them, but you still like them just a little bit, even though you don't want to tell anybody out loud.
Yeah.
He was great at embodying that. I think even, the 80s and the 90s. I didn't see him much, I think, after that. I know he was on The Office and like a Blacklist show or something.
Yeah.
I do watch Blacklist. He's very good in that show in playing like a psychopath, especially as like a Gen X watching him through the 80s and 90s playing the douchebag.
Watching the hairline recede.
Right. I'm like, I totally picture this douchebag becoming a psychopath. This works.
Oh, totally.
This
works. Yeah. With his, that little, because he wears that hat, right? That kind of. Shady got a brim hat, you know, and Blacklist. I watched like 3 seasons of it, and you know.
I just watched the episode that Lucas Hassel was in. So I'm like, it's fucking Lucas Hassel. That man's just beautiful, you know? I'm like, Michelle Pfeiffer, he could stand there and scratch his ass for an hour and a half. I'd probably shell out $20 to watch it.
It's like, brilliant. definitely. And what was very clever about this film is like, it it highlights the werewolf transformation, and you know, in more of a subtle, clever way. Just like the classic scene, you know, when he's hearing, you know, the heightened sense of hearing now. He's like hearing people in offices, and he hearing people talking shit about him, and like the coup that might happen. So I mean, you know, it's not it was very. I'm sorry.
The first time we actually see his like wolf senses coming out is brilliant, because he's walking through the office and someone passes him and he goes,
"Little early,
early for tequila, isn't it? Or it's a little early for tequila, isn't it?" Yeah, I was like, "Yes."
It shows you like where he got bit by the wolf, and I love how the first line of dialogue in the film is shit. Yeah. Like the opening line of dialogue. I mean, like the wolf, you know, the bite, it gets a little bit hairy and stuff like that, but it's like he smells the tequila on that guy's breath. It's like he goes out, there's just that cacophony of sound. David Hyde Pierce, that's another person in the cast.
Yeah.
But I mean, and it's when he's sitting there reading, and he's just blasting through the scripts and stuff like that, and his reading glasses are sitting at the front of the desk. Right. And you don't think anything about it until David Hyde Pierce's character comes in and is like, "You're not wearing your glasses." And Nichols is like,
"Did you get contacts?" Yeah.
And then we're just like, "Huh." So, I mean, it's like, it was a subtle little thing to where it's just like, it wasn't just his hairline grows back and now he's got wicked side shots. It was, you know, naturally long. Like, I mean, the subtleties, and I think not showing a full transformation, because especially having Rick Baker involved, I mean, like Werewolf in London and everything else like that, like, there would have been so many parallels that could have been drawn that would have already damaged a somewhat shaky film premise to begin with.
Right. Well, in interviews with Rick Baker, he said he didn't really need to do anything for Jack's special effects. James Spader did require a lot of facial hair.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, it's like, I think for Nicholson, it's like, just, I don't know, fluff out the sideburns.
And yeah.
I mean, he just took, it's actually... But one thing that I was reading is that supposedly there was an original ending that tested horribly with audiences.
Oh.
I've seen stuff. So I've seen some things that said like they reshot, you know, the last third of the film. Other things coming from more studio based sources, like, no, it was just like one or two shots in the last scenes. But I would love to know, because apparently Mike Nichols and the original screenwriter, Jim Harrison, did not get along at all.
Wow.
So it's like they brought in Nichols brought in one of his writing partners and someone else to kind of polish it up. But apparently like, there was like major clashes between Nichols and Harrison.
Yeah.
Well. But yeah, I mean, just to know like what was the original ending of, like, what were they going to do? I don't know. I always want to know about the what ifs of film sometimes.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. Or maybe it was like Michelle Pfeiffer, like, it's like a Romeo and Juliet situation. Like, you know, maybe Michelle Pfeiffer ultimately have to kill Jack or something like that.
Yeah, or maybe, I mean, maybe they go off paw and paw over the cliff all fucking Thelma and Louise style, dude. Like, man. I don't know.
I don't want to go back.
Yeah, like, I mean, like, Nicholson wolfed out and then, like, he got caught by, like, animal control and then, like, they just took him and had him neutered and then, like, he unwolfed out after he was neutered and then... Mm.
Yeah,
like a neutered Nicholson, because that's not easy to say.
No, I don't think he will want you to say that.
I'm not going to be able to hang out with him anymore.
No, no Lakers tickets for you.
I used to go to Harlem Globetrotters a lot when I was a kid back in St. Louis. They always played Kiel Auditorium. It was the Harlem Globetrotters and then the Steamers, like the soccer team. That was a weird tangent. I just wanted to share that with you.
Right. Hey, you know, maybe you want to watch those Scooby-Doo Harlem Globetrotters episodes. Man.
It's got to be coming up. Like, we've seen, like, the Addams Family, and then watch them all with Don Knotts, and then, Wonder Woman was on, Laurel and Hardy. Like, we had 113 Boomerang. They're showing, like, it's Scooptober or some shit, so it's just, like, all the Scooby-Doo stuff. So.
Right on. It's getting along. Yeah, Scooby-Doo is cool.
The hotel in The Shining, running into Jack Nicholson.
That'd be cool. Yeah, they totally should have tackled that.
Let's go. Like, you want to go into room 237? I'm not going into room 237. Scooby-Snack. fuck no, there's a dead lady in the bathtub. No, go in there, you know?
Yeah, dude, you know, blood coat.
Pull his ass out over his eyes and shove him in the room.
You know? There you go. Yeah, you got the blood coming down the elevator. That's a, definitely a Zoinks move right there. One of the two. So pretty much after rewatching this film, I have more respect for this movie. I like a lot more, and like watching it through adult eyes now, because I think I seen it when it came out in the year 94, and then I watched it again maybe late 90s, early 2000s, something like that. And it's one of those movies I kind of forgot about. But then, you know, someone, you know, me and Jenna, we usually kind of throw text out like, oh, you know, what you guys want us to review? Someone was like, Wolf. I was like, oh, right. I forgot about that movie. I need to rewatch it. And yeah, I mean, it's like I said, it's a movie of its time. It's a movie that, you know, you would never, that kind of film you would never see again. Therefore, like, I respect it more. I respect the subtleties of the film and how they tackle the werewolf, you know, mythology and, you know, the story, how they modernize it, brought it into, like, you know, contemporary landscape, you know, publishing. I mean, that business in itself is almost extinct, or is extinct, have a way, whoever you talk to. So
you've sort of opened up the door, Yusuf, of how we should rate this movie.
Gotcha.
So ass on the sofa, it's good to watch. Stay home, don't get distracted. Putting your shoes on, not really sure if you should sit and watch it or go do some other shit, or run out of the house without a mask and get exposed to COVID.
So there's three.
Are you saying there's age limits based on, like, if you're young, it's probably put on your shoes, but if you're old, it's sit on the sofa?
Huh, that's a good point. That's a good point. Okay, if you're older, I think by default is a sit down, because I'm sure
a boomer, like boomer, Gen X, or millennial. Like,
yeah.
Boomer, Gen X, millennial, go fucking cry in your sleep.
Yeah, but if you are a younger person who's curious about, you know, a more mature rendition of the werewolf.
I'm still going back to The Graduate for a second. I'm like, go on.
Yeah, no Mrs. Robinson here. But I would say, you know, if you're curious, if someone is curious, like, Jack Nicholson made a werewolf movie, I would say watch it. Yes, it don't have, the pacing is not of your typical, you know, werewolf film or vampire film. You know, it's very character driven. I always say that with a comedy. It's more of a character driven film than an effects or, you know, gore driven like film.
I think the movie needs to be rebranded. Let's not call it a werewolf movie or a horror movie. Let's call it a midlife crisis movie.
Yeah.
Gothic midlife crisis.
Yeah, midlife gothic crisis.
I give it two paws up.
Yeah, I mean, I give it a sit down because I'm at that age where I can appreciate this movie.
If you want to see a werewolf movie, then fucking watch American Werewolf in London and watch The Howling. Watch The Wolfman with Lon Chaney Jr.
Yeah.
Skip the fucking remake with the half open eye guy, Benicio del Toro.
Yeah.
So bad.
Shit about Twilight. I don't
care. Oh God, no, please. Don't mention it.
The Twilight movies don't count.
They don't count.
Stick with The Howling and American Werewolf in London. You're fine.
Yeah, agreed.
Or Dog Soldiers is a really good one.
Yes. Dog Soldiers. Agreed. Yeah.
Yeah. So what about you, Gina Wall?
I mean, I'm somewhere between ass on the sofa and putting my shoes on, because I do like recognize that it is a, like, for a midlife crisis movie, it is a very good movie, but it is a bit slow paced. And right now I need something that needs to keep me more entertained and a little more action. Yeah. So,
yeah, that's understandable. Yeah, no, I mean,
I watched it while sanding the walls. It is a great movie to watch while you're doing home improvement projects, because you can listen to all the dialogue is perfect. Yeah. There's so many fantastic one-liners and so much like dialogue going on. The script writing was fantastic. That you can like clean the house, sand walls, do some plaster work, and still thoroughly enjoy the movie.
Yeah, for those who don't know, Jenna was doing some home improvement.
You're a lot more productive than I was when I watched it. I smoked the bowl. I'm like, I'm sleepy.
Yeah, now I have my popcorn and like, hey, I'm just going to watch the movie. I have my popcorn and my drink. It's like, hey, I'm about to rewatch it because I mean, I got. Yeah, no one is. I live in an apartment complex, and no one is living, you know, in the apartment under me, so I can crank up the subwoofer really good. So, yeah, so I was kind of getting full growls and jack snores. So that was pretty cool. yeah, cool guys. So there you have it. Woof, 1994 film. Jack Nicholson, Michelle Pfeiffer. The general consensus amongst us three is, you know, just give it a look. You know, if you're curious, check it out. You definitely, if anything, you will like the performances, you know. It's just good acting. It's Mike Nichols. He's going to make sure there's going to be some good acting in his movies. So, yeah, guys. So, any last word, Mr. Jason?
He's thinking, guys. He's thinking.
Sexual chocolate.
That boy, good. Like,
you guys ever do? You made the comment about this movie couldn't really be made today. I think a lot about movies that couldn't possibly be remade. And one of the quick tangent, I think one of the films that made me want to be a filmmaker was The Exorcist. Just because of seeing the news real reaction of people like running out the aisle, screaming, crying, puking, and shitting themselves all at the same time. You know, I'm like, I want to fuck with people like that. Like, I want to do that. Like, I've never liked people. I can hate people. I love persons, hate people. I knew I wanted to mess with the heads of the monkeys. So I'm like, I want to do it like that. Paid money to do that and fuck them. But like, I think, you know, The Exorcist is one of those movies that can never be redone. And the tangent, I promise that the train is going to get back on the tracks here in about 17 seconds. We were watching Scooby-Doo last night, and Yusuf, and I was flipping the channels real quick on a commercial break because my boy was in the loo, and Blazing Saddles came on.
Oh.
And, it was right before the fart scene, so like I paused it. Like I waited patiently for him to stop playing Minecraft. I'm like, you see the greatest scene ever filmed in modern cinema history, and I showed him the fart scene. He's like, I can't. Daddy's fine. Rewound it and showed him. 27 minutes of fart scene later, he's like, we should buy this movie. I'm like, Daddy's got it in multiple copies.
Yeah.
But if you ever do a Blazing Saddles episode, I'm sure you've touched on it before, but like, I would love to be a part of that, because it's a movie that there's no fucking way that would ever, like, you wouldn't even make it to the, like, you wouldn't even be able to, yeah, you couldn't even, like, jerk off the barista guy who's going to slip the top of the drink somewhere. Like, there's no way you could even get in that.
All the Karens and Kens out there would get up in arms about everything.
Yeah. Oh yeah, yeah. I mean, it would be totally neutered. It would be PG-13, and it would probably be like Jonah Hill and somebody.
Fucking Rogan, some shit like that.
Yeah, exactly. No, it'd be a stoner western.
Yeah. But like, I mean, like I'm so conflicted because like I would love to try and be able to pull that off. Just to make everybody mad, but then there's no way you're ever going to compete with Mel Brooks. So it's just weird thing. But it's like it's one of those movies where it's like there is no possible way you couldn't even come. Even the fucking little shitty CBS pilot spinoff they were going to do.
Oh yeah,
where like Dawson Jr. plays Cleavon Littlefield. Like there's no way it would happen.
Yeah, exactly.
Damn it.
Yeah, and plus it didn't hurt. Having Richard Pryor, like, you know, riding alongside with Mel Brooks on the Blazing Saddle script. So,
There's no way it would have been the same without him.
Exactly. Exactly. Just throw down a list of movies that will never.
Yeah. Yeah. Or the Sleepaway Camp, but we'll talk about, like, there's a surprise cock and balls. You're like, ah, mystery penis.
Yeah. But, spoilers. Yeah, and that's why we, you know, hold certain films of, you know, those, you know, that time period so close, because we know, like, yeah, they can reboot and reimagine all, like, stuff all they want, but there's certain films that they're not going to touch. You know?
Well, there's no way. Yeah, I think one of the things I've always been really happy about is, because it seems like to me, for the most part, the 80s fantasy genre seems to be the one that has escaped the reboot, remake, refranchise machine.
Yeah.
To be like, Beastmaster. I mean, fucking, they did the one shitty Conan remake and they were like, that was bad. You know, I mean, like Beastmaster, Sword in the Stone, Sword in the Sorcerer.
Yeah, Sword in the Sorcerer, yeah.
All of the like 80s movies where kids are put in danger, they will never remake any movie where a child is put in danger, like Goonies. Can you imagine?
End the story.
Your parents,
Monster Squad, where you've got kids smoking and looking at porn.
Yep,
right,
very much.
Like, I mean, just the fact that you've got a child smoking, Blazing Saddles reboot could probably get greenlit faster than like. There's a job because I had to do even for Kill Beagles, because I had to go through all major legal deliverables and paperwork. And there were several minors that were just backgrounds. We got a movie about clowns. We had kids in this arcade and all sorts of stuff like that. The amount of paperwork per child actor, I was just like, holy.
Yeah.
And there was one thing I had to fill out, like it was a memo basically like testifying that all of the minors involved in this movie were not involved in any scenes that had sexual content. I mean, the amount of detail I had to go into on this memo, I'm like, it made me fucking sick. Cause I'm like, I don't want to have to write this. Like, what it is. It was a weird thing. Weird tangent. Let's get back to.
Well, I'm glad you survived it, man. I mean,
I did. I'm trying. I will survive. Me and Gloria. We got it.
Yeah, you got to go through the shit. You know?
Oh yeah. No, I've been through that for how old am I? 44 years.
Right on. Cool.
I don't know any day now.
Yeah, well, but we all good. And
the tunnels of train.
Yeah, well, we got to get through that though. but yeah, so I hope you guys enjoy our revisiting. You know, the 1994 with Wolf. Again, we like to do two things. Oh, and Heidi liked to say hi. That's Jen was a little puppy, not so small puppy.
She's going to contribute to Wolf.
Yeah.
Adequately so, I think.
Exactly.
I forgot we were recording. I'm glad I didn't do letters.
Hey, you know, like I said, it's not for kids, so do what you may. And speaking of which, many thanks to the great Jason. I appreciate you. Thanks for coming on.
Thanks for asking me, sir. It was an honor and a privilege.
I appreciate it.
And when your movie is released, you'll have to come back.
Yeah, you got to come back. We'll do like a kill giggle episode.
Of course, that would be amazing.
Yeah, exactly. Got to put the spotlight on you, man.
We got to.
Right on. Well, until next week, everyone, wish everyone safe physical distancing and
please vote and wear a fucking mask.
Yes, please.
And use your turn signals. I was sitting.